Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve.
Man, so I had one of the most bizarre incidents of my life this week while I was sitting with my aging dad in an assisted living facility. I was helping him to transition from a life of independency to a life of dependency. And while I was there, and this is crazy, but he and I FaceTimed with my son and my daughter-in-law as they welcomed their third child, my third grandchild, into the world. Her name's Gwendolyn Parker. I think that you'll appreciate seeing her. Yeah. And I thought, how bizarre that my father's world of complexity, like filled with responsibilities and making decisions and paying bills, it was making a slow transition back to simplicity. And meanwhile, there was my granddaughter, his great-granddaughter, born into simplicity. And let's face it, she, just like you and me, she is going to make the journey from simplicity into complexity and then back to simplicity again. From dependency to independency and back to dependency again. That's a pattern of life for each of us, isn't it? We're born into this life, and we have like this triad of experiences when we're born into life. And how does it go? We eat when we're born. We're babies. We eat, we sleep, and we use the restroom, right, in our pants. That's what we do. We use the restroom in our pants. Or if you're like my son, whenever he was brought home from the hospital, my wife had an emergency C-section, and my oldest son, the one who just had the granddaughter, when we brought him home, what we didn't realize is that he would eat and eat and eat and eat. And after he would eat and eat and eat and eat, do you know what would happen? He would blow. That's what he would do. He would blow. So I was in the back room with Matthew, that's my son, and he is a little bitty baby. My wife is standing there watching what I'm doing. She's sore from her C-section, and she's standing there watching me, and I lay Matthew down on his back on the changing table, and I undo his little bitty diaper because he's been really fussy, and we're like, what's going on? Maybe he's dirty, and I pull it back, and I mean dry, clean. I'm like, what is going on? And as I'm doing this, he proceeds to explode from his mouth, and he's laying on his back, and so he begins to gag and cough. Well, I, being the Superman-like father that I am, I scoop him up. I have one hand on his chest. I have one hand under his bottom, and I give him a little bounce, you know, to get that out of his mouth. And my wife is behind me hurting. She's like, what's going on? Is he okay? Is he okay? You know, and I'm like, he's fine. He's fine. And as I'm bouncing him, what I didn't realize is this was like shaking up a bottle of Diet Coke is what this was right here. Yeah. But instead of him exploding from the top, he, and that's exactly what it sounded like. My son, for his first poopy, did so in the hand of his father, me. That's right. My son's first bowel movement was right there in my hand. And Michelle is behind me laughing hysterically, which is causing her to cry out in pain. And she's still worried. Matthew is crying that long baby cry with a big breath. And then letting it all out again. But I think deep inside that brain of his, he is laughing and thinking, shoot, Pops, you ain't seen nothing yet. That's what he was thinking right there. And today, that little baby that pooped in my hand, can I say poop here? I guess I can. Who pooped in my hand is a father of three, and he has transitioned from a life of simplicity into a life of complexity, complete with wife, children, bills, responsibility. And I'm like, who's laughing now, little poopy boy? Who's laughing? It's a circle of life. Yeah, I love that. All right. So not only is this journey from simplicity to complexity true in our migration from the cradle to the grave, but it's at work in all areas of our lives. It's at work in our jobs. You mow grass as a kid and you run a landscape business as an adult? Is it work in our relationships? A relationship starts out with, all we need is love, yeah. And it concludes with something like, Santa baby, slip a sable under, how about that diamond ring, how about that car? I'm just kidding. Doesn't always go that way. But our relationships, think about yours, they start simple and they work their way into complexity. Is it work in our faith? We start maybe with a simplicity of belief and somehow we drift our way into complexity. Which brings us to our series, Free from Condemnation, Expectation, and Obligation. If you missed last week's message, I strongly encourage you to check it out online at vivalaverve.org. It is definitely worth it. The good news is all of the teachings here, they stand on their own. So if you missed last week, it's not like, oh great, it's like I'm starting in chapter 4 of the book. It's not like that at all. But last week, our lead pastor, Vince, who's speaking at a church in Phoenix this week, he explained that religion and Christianity, they are not the same thing. And to sum up the differences, he used a key word. And for religion, he used the word do. It's the things that you do or that you don't do that determine whether or not you're able to climb the ladder to make like this forever connection with God. On the flip side, that key word for Christianity is the word done. Whether or not you connect with God has nothing to do with what you do, but it has everything to do with what Jesus has already done. Jesus came down the ladder from heaven to make a way back to God for us. And the only thing that we can do is believe in him. That's it. Christianity is simple, trust Jesus, and religion is complex. Work really, really hard, try to do all the right things, cross your fingers, and hope for the best. That's religion. But unfortunately, many of us in our faith, we start simple and we drift into complex. And I was thinking when my granddaughter was born, I think maybe a little bit of our drift has to do with our personality. And I was wondering, what is Gwendolyn going to be like? Have you guys ever taken a personality test? Yeah, okay, we have a handful of you. Maybe it was a DISC or the Enneagram or the Myers-Briggs, or if you like getting really complicated, maybe it was which character are you in The Office? That one was pretty good. So I have a little test that I've set up for us this morning, and the test has one simple rule. What's the rule? You must participate. All right, so it's real simple. Here it is. Question number one. Would you consider yourself to be a rule follower? Think about it. If yes, question number two, do you feel compelled to hold others accountable to the rules? Now, if you answered yes to both of those questions, congratulations, you are in the ruler class. You are in the ruler class. That's a big deal. You know the rules and you uphold the rules. If you answered yes to question number one, accepting that, yeah, I think I'm a rule follower, but you said no to question number two regarding feeling compelled to hold others accountable to the rules, you, my friend, fall into the ruled class. Hey, don't worry though. It takes all sorts of people to make the world go round. So all you rulers, wave your hands. All you rulers? Yeah, now all you rulers, tell a rule to wave their hands. No? Okay, there we go. They'll do it. They're rule followers. And what's the first rule of the test, the only rule? You must participate. All right, so for those of you that answered question number one with a no, your next question is this. Do you have a tendency to buck authority and to upset the apple cart? If you answered yes to that question, you are of the rebel class. Let me hear your rebel yell. Yeah, man, that was an awesome rebel yell. Are you sure that you're not part of the ruled class? Because I think that you kind of, no? Okay, all right. For those of you that neither follow the rules, nor do you tend to buck authority, you're either a part of the ruled class, but you're in denial, or you are the runner. Yeah, the runner, avoiding conflict, flying under the radar, or literally running away from the pressure. And don't worry, I'm not going to ask you to wave your hands. That'd be just too much pressure for you right there. So a quick recap before we get into a little discussion on being free. The first thing we need to remember is we have a tendency to drift from simplicity to complexity in our lives and in our faith. Second thing, the key word for religion is do, and the key word for Christianity is done. Number three, we have rulers, the ruled, rebels, and runners among us. Yes, and which one are you? Better question. What does all of this have to do with being free from condemnation, expectation, and obligation? Or more specifically today, what does it have to do with being free from what other people think? I'm glad you asked. We are going to read together a part of a letter that's found in the Bible, and the letter is called Galatians because it was written to believers in Jesus that lived in a highland region of what's modern-day Turkey, and this region was called Galatia. The letter was written by Paul, who was a believer in Jesus, but hold on. Here's what you need to know about Paul. Paul was originally from the ruler class. He was from the ruler class of a religion known as Judaism, and Paul followed the rules, all 613 of them. Anybody want to sign up for that? No, we don't, unless you're the rule and you're like, absolutely, I want to sign up. I'm all about the rules. And Paul felt compelled to encourage every other Jew to follow the rules as well. And how did he encourage them? Well, like all of us would, he set out to systematically put them to death. He systematically wanted to put to death a specific group of the rebel class, namely those rebels that referred to themselves as Christian, followers of Jesus. But then while he was on his way to carry out his plan, Paul has like this catalytic encounter with the risen Jesus. Jesus had died on a cross and was buried and rose again. And Paul had heard stories, and this is what he's fighting against. But he's on this journey, and he has an encounter with Jesus himself. And Paul went from the ruler class to the rebel class as far as Judaism was concerned, becoming the outspoken, upset the apple cart believer in Jesus. And he even found himself running from the rulers that now wanted to kill him because Paul had gone to the extreme. That's who wrote this letter. Paul became so obsessed with what God thought about him that he didn't care what others thought about him. He realized that Christianity has nothing to do with what we do, and it has everything to do with what Jesus had already done. That Christianity had nothing to do with keeping 613 Old Testament laws and everything to do with trusting in Jesus. Believe me, this was extreme because up to this point in Paul's life, most of the believers were Jewish believers. They kept the Old Testament law, which it was really more so a cultural thing for them. This is something that they did. It was a cultural thing. So they kept the Old Testament laws while also believing that Jesus actually saved them. Galatia, the region that we're talking about, it was roughly 50-50 when it came to demographics. It was 50% Jewish, kind of having grown up in that Old Testament religious law sort of environment. Do, 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 don't, all of that stuff. And it was 50% pagan, which meant that some of the people there, they weren't worshiping any god, and other people there were worshiping like this complexity of gods. And Paul came to these people after meeting Jesus. He came to these people with a message of simplicity. And he calls it the gospel. And that word gospel, it means good news. And the basics of the gospel goes like this. There's one true God, the creator of everything, and he's perfect, and he's just, and he's loving. But our sin has separated us from God. And God loved us so much that he gave his only son, Jesus, to pay everyone life in him. God, our sin that separates, because that's what sin does. Think about when you wrong a friend of yours. Are you comfortable being around them? No, sin separates. That's what it does. So God sent Jesus to pay everyone life and restore us back into a right relationship with himself. It's not about what you do or don't do. It's all about what Jesus has done. So trust him. And this message, it resonated with the rulers and the ruled. They discarded their laws, their regulations, their list of do's and don'ts. And the rebels and the runners, they found common ground because of their hope in Jesus. The pagans walked away from their complex rituals and multitudes of gods, exchanging them for the simplicity of the gospel, the good news. So Paul had seen God kind of take these cultures and unify these various cultures of Galatia under the banner of Jesus. This is how the Galatians were living when Paul had last seen them. But they have a tendency. We have a tendency, don't we? We drift from simplicity back into complexity. One of the primary Jewish laws that these Christian communities had was that Jewish people could neither interact with nor eat with non-Jewish people. They called them the Gentiles. Now, if you were Gentile, you could become Jewish with a little surgery, just a snip, snip, snippy of circumcision. Could you imagine your wife coming to you and saying, "Honey, it's no big deal. Just do it." I don't think so. But the last that Paul had seen them, the Galatian Christians, they were one big happy family, Jews and Gentiles coming together under the banner of Jesus. Their faith in Jesus had allowed them to overlook their differences, but enter the drift. So in this letter, Galatians 1:7, and it's going to be on the screen behind me, and as well, we do offer free Bibles back at the Velcro Bar if you're interested in that. But Galatians 1:7, Paul writes to this church in Galatia. He says, "I am astonished that you, Galatians, are so quickly deserting the one," that would be Jesus, "who called you to live in the grace and peace and are turning to a different gospel." And that different gospel was rule following. That's what it was. He said, which is really no gospel, no good news at all. Evidently, some people, that would be the Jewish Christian ruler class, some people are throwing you into confusion and are trying to pervert the gospel of Christ. And they're doing that by trying to influence people to follow the Jewish laws. Yeah, making faith about what you do and less about what has already been done. And Paul goes on, and he asks them a question. He says, "Hey, look at me." He says, "Am I now trying to win the approval of human beings or of God? Or am I trying to please people?" He said, "Look, if I were trying to please people, I wouldn't even be a servant of Christ. I'd choose something else to do, because this is not pleasing people, what I'm doing here." Now, we need to remember that Paul had become so obsessed with what God thought about him that he didn't even care what others thought about him. But many of those people in Galatia had become so obsessed with what others thought about them that they forgot what God thought about them. So, when some Jewish Christian ruler class folks show up in Galatia, the former Jewish Christian ruled class that had broken free from that, they were free, they fell right back into the rules, separating themselves from the non-Jewish Christians. And why would they do that? Well, because they cared so much what others thought of them. That's why they would do that. And because they had a tendency to what? To drift from simplicity into complexity. Yeah. So it's tough to change classes. It's kind of like, to a degree, it's like shifting your personality. And if you combine that with that tendency to drift from simplicity to complexity, these Jewish Christians in Galatia, they didn't stand a chance. And before you and I start saying, well, I'm stronger than that, you know, I'm not like those weak-minded Galatian people that we're talking about, that are less committed, understand this, that even Peter, give you a little clarity on Peter is, have you ever heard of Saint Peter? Have you ever heard of a Peter being referred to as the first pope? He's the one that most people would associate with being one of, if not the main leader of Christianity at this time. That particular Peter, he fell prey to what others thought about him. That happened. Check this out. Paul writes and he says, when Cephas, now Cephas is a nickname for Peter, when Cephas came to Antioch, which is in Galatia, he said, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. For before these certain men, these religious rulers, came from James, James was in Jerusalem at the headquarter church, kind of. Before these certain men, these rulers came from James, Peter used to eat with the Gentiles in Galatia. That's what he used to do. But when these men arrived, Peter began to draw back and separate himself from the Gentiles because he was afraid of those who belonged to the circumcision group. The other Jews in Galatia, they joined Peter in his hypocrisy. Why would they do that? Because Peter was a ruler to them. I mean, he appeared to them as a ruler. They wanted to follow Peter's lead. So that by their hypocrisy, that means all these Jewish people now are kind of getting together and starting to follow the rules, even Barnabas, Paul's traveling companion and partner in ministry, even Barnabas was led astray. So don't think that we can't be led astray. Don't think that we can't drift from simplicity back into complexity, because it happens. So Paul says, when I saw that they weren't acting in line with the truth of the gospel, I said to Peter, to Cephas, in front of them all, you are a Jew, yet you live like a Gentile and not a Jew. So how is it then that you force the Galatians, the Gentiles, to follow Jewish customs? We who are Jews by birth, Paul's speaking of himself, speaking of Peter, he says, we who are Jews by birth and not sinful Gentiles, because that's how Jews looked at Gentiles, we know that a person is not justified by the works of the law, those 613 laws, but by faith in Jesus. So we too, Peter, you and me, we put our faith in Christ Jesus, that we may be justified by faith in Christ and not by the works of the law. Because by works of the law, no one can be justified. Now, just in case you're wondering what justified means, justified means just as if I'd never sinned, just as if I'd never wandered away from God, just as if I'd never done any wrong. Justified. So even Peter, one of the main proclaimers of the simplicity of the gospel, he falls prey to what other people think of him. Yeah. So Peter started, I think you might be able to relate to Peter. Peter started as a part of the ruled class, for all you rulers. He became a rebel when he decided to follow Jesus. And in the midst of that, he was basically elevated to the ruler class as Jesus' right-hand man, and he did his fair share of running whenever Jesus was arrested. So whichever class you're in, I think you can relate to Peter. And here's an applicable observation, I think, for all of us, regardless of who we are. regardless of which class you identify with, the ruler, the ruled, the rebel, or the runner. The observation is this: becoming obsessed with what others think about you is the quickest way to forget what God thinks about you. Let that sink in for a moment. Becoming obsessed with what others think about you is the quickest way to forget what God thinks about you. At the same time, and this is good news, becoming obsessed with what God thinks about you is the quickest way to forget what others think about you. So what does God think about you? I happen to know that God thinks the world of you. So much so that he sent his only son, Jesus, to die for you. Not to give you a list of things to do and don't do, because what needs to be done has already been done by Jesus. So today, I think God simply invites, saying, come.
I grew up in a little bitty town in Big Stone Gap, Virginia, just across the Tennessee state line. Everybody knew everybody's business, and it's just the way it was. My father was a preacher and a pastor. I grew up in a faith that was a very different type of religion. I grew up thinking that God had all these rules. You weren't allowed to go to movies or concerts or football games or prom dances. And I basically grew up in fear that if I could not follow those rules and demands, that I would make it to heaven. I've been a motorcyclist my entire life. I got my first bike at 14, and I've never not had a motorcycle. I moved out here to Las Vegas. I joined this outlaw motorcycle club, and I just pretty much took the gloves off for morality. Went up in the ranks, became the vice president. Started selling and using drugs. And I had one of the largest drug rings in Nye County. I was an absolute mess, and I hated God. I woke up and looked out the window. I heard a noise outside, and the entire 5 acres were filled with law enforcement. There were 2 SWAT teams, helicopters, and of course the news media. And they raided my house and arrested me and charged me for selling drugs, for drug sales. I was crushed. I was angry again. Fast forward about another 8 or 10 months, and I'm in trial. William Rocket Stidham, they gave me my sentence, and I went to High Desert Prison. I was completely broken. I was in a cell by myself. Oh my goodness, was I swearing at God. Because I'm blaming God for being in prison. I'm blaming God for all of this. I felt this pressure on my chest and on my mouth. And I come up trying to fight, and I couldn't get up. I couldn't even raise my hands. And then all of a sudden, it's like in my mind, I saw everything that I had done in my life and the path that I had taken. And I'm swearing at God. God's like, let me show you what's been going on. I know I heard God's voice. I heard, I love you. I will not leave you. I have a job for you. And it was that day that my life changed. I remember the first day that I got out of prison. Get your stuff ready, Stidham, you're moving out. 2 years and 6 months since I had been on the streets. It was a whole level of freedom that I'd never experienced. I felt renewed, not only being free from prison, but being free from the chains of the lifestyle that I had created for myself, prison was behind me. But from that day forward, I submerged myself in God's word. And it was the first time that I really experienced what God's love is about. Unbeknownst to me, God did have a plan. I saw God daily do things in my life to start putting my life back together. I meet Karina for the first time. She invited me to church. And lo and behold, she goes to Verve. I'd been coming to Verve for maybe 3 months at that time. The parole officer calls me. I need for you to come into the parole office. Thinking nothing of it. Okay, no big deal. Knight County law enforcement vowed that they were going to keep me in prison. They were never going to let me out. And Knight County called my parole officers and says, we have proof that William Rocket Stidham beat a man at a bar in Pahrump. I found myself back in High Desert Prison within a week. When they sent me back to prison, I was still free. I knew that this was God. It would work out for whatever reason. 3 weeks after I got to prison, I was cleared of the charge, but they left me in prison anyway. And it took Karina 5 months to get me back out. It took 5 months. I was able to witness and lead several of the men in prison to God. I just didn't understand what it was to serve God and to be loved by God. I don't think I allowed God to love me. You know, I didn't know how to let God love me. And I learned that in prison. I know this for a fact, that if God can change me from who I was to who I am, God can change anyone, no matter who they are, or where they've been, or what they've done. All the times I cursed God, and all the things that I'd done, I've been forgiven much, and I've been loved much. It's pretty awesome. It was and is an amazing feeling to be free. Free.
So Rocket bounced around a bit, didn't he? I mean, growing up, he was the ruled, being made to fall in line by the rulers. Later in life, he turned runner and eventually rebel. But then something mysterious happened in his life. Rocket was introduced to the simplicity of the gospel, that the one true God, who despite our sin, sent Jesus to pay everyone life. And this one true God pursued Rocket and caught up with him right there in Rocket's jail cell. And wherever you are today, ruler, ruled, rebel, runner, God's in pursuit of you. And he wants you to become a part of a different class. He wants you to become a part of the rescued, just like Rocket. So if you're here today and you're ready for rescue, in a few minutes we're going to talk with God. And as we do that, you can let God know. You can basically acknowledge that he is, you recognize that he is that one true God, and you can acknowledge that you've sinned and that the sin has brought separation. And then you can celebrate and acknowledge that God sent his son Jesus to pay you life, that you could be restored with him. If you're interested in learning more about what God thinks about you, so you can care less about what others think about you, I think the Bible is a pretty good place to start. And as I mentioned, we do have those available at the Velcro Bar, but we also have something called the Verve Catalyst. And you can find that online at our website. It's going to help you understand more and more each day what God thinks about you. And along with that, each week whenever we gather together, we remind ourselves of just how much God loves us by approaching the candlelit tables that are located around the room. These tables are there, they're set up kind of to remind us of the sacrifice that Jesus made to pay everyone life. And on them, you're going to find a cup of juice that represents Jesus' blood, and you'll find a piece of bread that represents his body. And his invitation is to everyone. So the band is going to be coming out, and as they play, if you're interested in celebrating what Jesus did on the cross, you can do that by approaching those tables and taking a cup and a piece of bread back to your seat with you and giving him thanks for paying you life. Let's take a moment and talk with God. God, we give you just great thanks that you are the one true God, and that despite our sin, you sent your son Jesus to pay everyone, all of us here, life. Thank you that all that we need to do is to believe, to acknowledge this good news before you. So God, for those who are here today and they're thinking, man, I've been the rebel, or I've been the runner, I've been the ruler or the ruled, and I want to be a part of the rescued. And God, you're tugging on their heart right now. God, on their behalf, just acknowledge today that you are God, and that we're broken, and that our sin has separated us from you. God, today we give you thanks that you sent Jesus to pay everyone life, and we choose that life today. We choose to be a part of the rescued class. And we say thanks. Thank you for your reckless pursuit of us. In the name of Jesus.